Blog Talk Radio.
Summer. Hope everybody out there is enjoying their Labor Day weekend. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Busy program in just this hour. We'll certainly love to go an hour and a half or 2 hours, but we'll do the best we can with these 60 minutes, that we have. We begin with some college football, the game of the certainly the game of the week of the weekend, as Michigan takes on Alabama in a classic matchup, two of the most storied programs in college football history. Michigan has won more games than any team in college football history. Alabama has won more national championships than any team in college football, or claims more championships than any team in college football history, depending on who you believe. I mean, Alabama, USC, you know, they claim championships from the 30s that nobody, that people are not alive to see, just all played, but they've won a ton of national championships and are the current defending national championships. And right now, Alabama is the premier program in college football. There's no question about it in terms of what they've been able to do over the past 4 years in the toughest conference in college football in the SEC. Listen, Alabama has been off the charts in the last 4 years, in particular these matchups, these interconference matchups under Nick Saban. 18-6 against ranked opponents, 10-4 against top 10 opponents. And to show you how much respect that they command, they are a 14-point favorite. Now, some of that has to do with the fact that Michigan is going to be playing without their running back, the Fitzgerald Toussaint, who last year had over 1,000 yards rushing. But this is more about just the respect of the SEC and the respect that Alabama brings to the table. 14 points. Think about it. They are a 14-point underdog favorite over a top-10 team. Michigan, you know, a lot of people think Michigan is an outside contender for a national championship. At worst, they certainly can get to a BCS game, Rose Bowl, and, you know, rank number 8. Coming in ranked number 8 in the country. This game is much bigger for Michigan than it is Alabama. Alabama, you know, I read somewhere, somebody said that Michigan was playing with house money. I'm like, how? How are they playing with house money? And, you know, Michigan is a proud program that is trying to reestablish itself amongst the elites of the elites. And I mean the elites of elites. I'm talking Alabama. I'm talking LSU. I'm talking where USC was and where I think USC is going to be this year. Those particular programs, Oregon, they're trying to add Oklahoma. This is a much bigger game. You know, Alabama can lose this game and still play for the national championship. Alabama lost late in November and played for and won the national championship. This game, it means something to both teams, but I'm not going to say it means, you can't sit up and say it doesn't mean anything in Michigan. There are games that revitalize programs. I'm going to give you two examples over the last 15, 20 years. Virginia Tech in 95 beat Miami 13-7. This was before Michael Vick got there. They beat Miami, and from then on, Virginia Tech has been, the premier team in the ACC. Has been one of the top. Virginia Tech has established themselves as a top 10 program under Frank Beamer. That one win galvanized their entire football program. Beating Miami. Now, prior to that, Miami had beaten them. It was 12-0 against Virginia Tech lifetime. That has almost been flipped to where now that's the series is 17-12. And I'll go in and I'll use another one. Oklahoma beating Nebraska in the fall 2000. From then on, that year Oklahoma would go on to win a national championship, and from that point on, under Bob Stoops, Oklahoma has been legitimately one of the top four or five programs in college football. One win can galvanize your program and put your program on the map. Last year, Florida State had a chance to do it against Oklahoma. It didn't happen. I mean, this is a huge game. In terms of building and rebuilding their program for Michigan, it goes beyond the national title implications this year. I'm talking about just getting their program back to where it was, back to when, Charles Woodson was, winning a championship with Charles Woodson back in 97, back to that level. But again, will not certainly be easy against an Alabama team that comes in loaded offensively. Great offensive line, A.J. McCarron back for another year, seemingly a better set of receivers. And, I know they lost a couple of players on defense, but outside of LSU, nobody comes close to recruiting defensive talent other than Alabama. And again, this will be the third time in 4 years that Alabama plays in a game of this magnitude. As far as like a kickoff classic, 2008, they beat Clemson 34-10. Clemson at the time was ranked number 9. Following year, they beat Virginia Tech 34-24. Clemson at the time, Virginia Tech was ranked number 7. So, Alabama's, this is a neutral site. Alabama's used to this kind of games. It'll be an SEC. It will absolutely be in, it's in Arlington, Texas. It will be an SEC crowd. They'll make no mistake about it. Now, Michigan travels well, but we're talking about the SEC here. So, I think, the running back gets suspended. It hurts Michigan a lot in this game. It hurts them. Because now, Alabama's able to squarely focus in on Denard Robinson. And to me, you give Nick Saban an entire offseason to plan for one team and look at and circle one team. I don't see how, that to me is the ultimate determining factor from my opinion. So I like Alabama in the game, but again, it should be entertaining seeing Denard Robinson going against that Alabama defense and how they're going to defend him. So college football's first major test, top 10 game, SEC powerhouse against a Big Ten powerhouse. We'll see who comes out on top. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. When we come back, we'll have some Saturday morning headlines. We'll be right back. Thank you. 10 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. Again, call number 347-215-6180. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning. Who will win the national championship? I have Alabama, LSU, USC, and Florida State as some of the candidates. Certainly, you could, you know, toss in Oregon, Oklahoma, a team like that as a candidate. Always a surprise team that comes out of nowhere and becomes a contender. You know, maybe, you know, Michigan wins this game, this will go a long way in them establishing themselves as legit national title contenders. So never know in college football. So, you know, such a long season, so unpredictable. To me, you know, looking at these rankings, the rankings don't count as far as I'm concerned right now. The real rankings don't start to me until, you know, October when those first BCS rankings come out. But it's certainly good to see college football back. Unfortunately, with the Saturday morning headlines, another fan has passed away from falling in a stadium. 20-year-old fan dies from a 35-foot fall at the Georgia Dome as he was attending the Tennessee-North Carolina State game yesterday. And to me, this is becoming a far too often occurrence in these sporting venues. You had the guy from Reliance Stadium, 25 years old, dying from the 60-foot escalator fall a couple of days ago at a preseason game between the Texans and Vikings. You remember the guy who died, basically passed away in front of his daughter at the ballpark in Arlington, earlier this year. It's just, you know, I can't understand why we can build these hundred million dollars facilities, have all the humanities, have all everything imaginable, but you can't keep people safe, which is the most, by far and away, the most important aspect of your facility, is keeping people safe. And this has happened one too many times. This is three times in a year, two times in a week. I don't get it. I mean, maybe George Mitchell should launch a report on how to keep our fans safe at stadiums instead of looking into, you know, steroids. Maybe Congress needs to get into this. Because people are dying. And I don't hear a big enough fuss about this. All right, it is this, you know, people are losing their lives. It's not safe to go to a stadium and watch a game anymore. And then you hear and you read that, you know, it was an accident. That's not a good enough excuse for me. You know, if you told me it was situations where, you know, a guy was drinking, he was out of control, it would obviously be tragic, but I would be more like, you know, this is a tragedy, but he was drunk, or they were drunk, or they just, you know, were on drugs or some just extenuating circumstance that would better explain this. Saying that it was an accident does not explain this. It's not a legit excuse. These kind of accidents should not happen at stadiums, period. I mean, that's all there is to it. If you got to put an extra $5 or $10 million into safety, then so be it. Somebody needs to start holding these facilities and NFL, college football, to accountable for this happening. Major League Baseball, it should not happen. Now, I mean, if a guy or somebody goes out there and loses their mind, just jumps off jumps off the escalator, jumps out of the stands, then that, you know, that's out of the control of other people there, of the people at the stadium or around the stadium. But this, I mean, but these are just basic accidents. These are just, like I'm saying, I'm going to use the word again, accident. Accidents that are happening far too often. Michigan State defeats Boise State 17-13. Michigan State, Le'Veon Bell, 244 carries, 210 yards, and a touchdown, two touchdowns. Michigan State hanging on after blowing a 10-point lead early on in the game. As we speak, Notre Dame and Navy are playing a game in Ireland as we speak. So the score is 0-0 for that particular score. So certainly Notre Dame fans will keep their eyes on that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will have the Redskin Report. Not a great day or evening for one Tim Hightower. We'll talk about that and also Chris Cooley as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, Cyril Quinn taking you up until the 10 o'clock hour as we discuss the world of sports. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. Twitter has annoyed me because they have a limitation on followers, on how many people you can follow. So I need people to start following me so I can follow more people. So we want to spread the word of... We want to spread the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We want to spread the show out. We want more people to know about it. But, again, Twitter has, kind of handcuffed me in terms of how many people I can follow. I try to follow as many people as possible. Want to get the show out there. So, if you, at William Gerald, you can follow me. I'll follow back once Twitter takes the handcuffs off and allows me to follow more people. So keep that in mind. Also, you can hit me up at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. Also, go on the website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Redskin Report, as the Redskins get ready for their regular season opening game against the New Orleans Saints. Certainly won't be easy down there in the Big Easy. But before they can get to that, they had to, of course, trim their roster to 53 players. Right now, 52, and they leave a spot for an additional player. And Tim Hightower was the big name that, of course, is out. Had a number of injuries, coming off the knee injury from last year. It's not, I don't think it's a big shock. I didn't think the Redskins were going to keep four running backs, and one of those guys was going to go. But that's That's how it is. I mean, that's the NFL for you. You get hurt. When you get hurt, there's a chance that unless you're a superstar, especially if you're a marginal to very to decent player, unless you're a superstar, you're not going to keep your job. Hightower was gone. They keep Boyd Helou Jr., Alfred Morris, and Evan Royster. Royster and Helou Jr. are not the healthiest right now either. Alfred Morris really has an opportunity to possibly be the starting running back, which means nothing. Okay, and I'm not trying to downplay, listen, I'm sure Alfred Morris didn't come in thinking he was going to be the starting running back for Washington Redskins coming out of college, but yeah, the reason I said it means nothing is because in Mike Shanahan's system, he's going to use a lot of running backs. They don't have one running back that stands out. So, if you're on the roster as a running back, you're going to get some touches. There's no two ways about it. Anthony Armstrong is also out as well. The Redskins keep Briscoe, who had a very good rookie season for Tampa Bay. He had 6 touchdown catches. They'll keep Briscoe. They'll keep Brandon Banks. Of course, about Santana Moss, Hankerson as well. So I don't think there was any major surprises. Major surprises from that standpoint. Some daunting news for the Redskins. Tanar Jackson suspended without pay, violating the substance abuse program, the NFL substance abuse program. So, he probably finished as a Redskin. I'll be shocked if he's on the team coming up throughout the course of this year. Earlier in the week, Redskins, of course, got rid of a fan favorite in Chris Cooley, Captain Chaos, they used to call him, Little Doc Walker, they used to call him Braveheart for his toughness. Cooley had a decent career, had 33 catches, 33 touchdown catches for his entire career. Came in 2004. Was a tough player. Even at his best season was a 83 catch, 825 yard season. But he was never an elite tight end. And the Redskins have been taking some heat in terms of how they cut him and how they went about doing it. Listen, it's like breaking up with somebody. Is there an easy way to? Is there a clean breakup? And you're in a relationship, you break up all of a sudden, or they break up with you, is there, I don't know how you can have a clean break. I mean, when you basically tell somebody, I don't want you anymore. And that was basically they told Chris Cooley, we don't want you anymore. And they did it with respect. I don't think this is the NFL. People get cut all the time. Superstars, future Hall of Famers at points in their careers get cut. So I don't know what the outcry is of Chris Cooley. Chris Cooley getting cut? Chris Cooley can't play anymore. I mean, that's all it is to it. They were using him at halfback. I mean, come on. I mean, he wasn't even the tight end position. Miles Paul and Fred Davis. Look, that it's their position now. So I don't get I don't see it as a big move. I was surprised that he was still on the team in terms of being a halfback. And I'm certainly not shocked that he gets cut. We have a caller on the line. We'll get this caller right now.
Me and you, and
caller, what's your name? What's on your mind?
Not a big deal. That's your problem. I don't hate him any different, but I was a little shocked. But that's the way it goes. Free country, I guess, right?
Yeah, I would say.
I don't know. I'm just come on, guys.
Well, our call is engaged in another conversation, so we'll get to the next one. Chris Cooley had he's a very productive Redskin. He played with heart. He, played hurt. He was a good Redskin. Not a great Redskin. Not a great player by any stretch of imagination. Had a very productive career. But again, there have been a lot better players than Chris Cooley that have gotten cut in the NFL, trust me. So we'll talk more about the Washington Redskins going into next week. We're going to push back our NFC East preview show. We were supposed to do an NFC East preview this morning. We're going to push that back and make it a part of our big premiere week in terms of the season 5 of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We're going to have a ton of fun with our season 5 premiere. Either Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll do an NFC East preview. I would prefer to do it Wednesday as we lead up to the kickoff of the NFL season, between the Cowboys and Giants. But if it doesn't happen Tuesday, if it doesn't happen Wednesday, we're going to do it on Tuesday. So all you fans out there, Cowboy fans, Giant fans, wondering about where has the NFC East preview been at? We're still gonna do it, but we're gonna make it part of our big season 5 Saturday Morning Wake Up Call preview show. Again, we have a big week of shows lined up next weekend. We'll have that. We'll have the NFC season preview. Also, do some little bit of fantasy stuff. We will have the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call premiere show, season 5 premiere show next Saturday. Do a lot of college football, a lot of NFL, Super Bowl predictions. And then following that, either the following Monday or Tuesday, we will have the season 2 or season 3 of the NFL show as we look back on week one of the NFL season. So back to football, we're almost there. September 5th, Giants and Cowboys. Hopefully the Cowboys, I never thought I would say this, but I do want to see a competitive game and want to see the high quality football. Hopefully the Cowboys can get healthy. Some of the offensive people can get healthy before that game occurs against the Giants. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to that as we go into the NFL season the referees are still locked out. They've been locked out. So as of right now, they're going to go into the season with NFL, with replacement officials. They're negotiating. They are negotiating. I don't understand what the NFL is doing here. I just give them their $3.2 million or whatever you have to give them, and keep it moving. I don't get the NFL. You cannot. There have been too many embarrassing missed calls in the preseason to not have the full-time, to not have the regular officials start off the season. I mean, you can't. The NFL is too valuable of a commodity. You can't take away from the integrity of the game over a couple of millions of dollars. You can't. If you're Roger Goodell, this gets done like right now. Especially Roger Goodell sending out a letter, talking about the bounty situation, what have you. Forget about that. Get this referee lockout situation settled like now. Forget about the bounty. The bounties are over, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not even thinking about it anymore. Is your call number. When we return, Hall of Famer or not, we will discuss that. We will discuss Andy Roddick as he is headed into the sunset of his tennis career. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk some baseball as well. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. 31 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Cyril Quinn taking you to 10 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Seven episodes in, just amazingly, just 9 episodes left in Breaking Bad. Season in Breaking Bad season 5, part one, season finale will be tomorrow. You saw the big move last week, Walt taking out Mike. Though a buddy of mine thinks he wanted to kill Mike. I don't think he wanted to kill Mike. That's why I think he had that look on his face like, oh my goodness, what did I just do? I don't think he wanted to kill Mike. I really don't. Now, it was clear that Mike had just slipped, and Mike. You know, Mike had probably more sloppy moves in the first 7 episodes of this season than he had in the whole show combined since he joined the show in season 2. I mean, Mike, you know, to allow Walt to pick up that suitcase with the gun in it, to leave Walt with the methane, you know, tying him up to a heat radiator. Mike, you can tell Mike. I predicted to a friend a couple of weeks ago. I think Mike is gone. I don't see Mike making it to part 2 of season 5. I don't. Thought the arc of his character had just, you know, had his time was coming up to where it just had run out. There was no further place to go with Mike but for him to die. And it comes about that, you know, Mike takes him out. Walter takes him out. And buddy of mine made a good point about Walt. The thing about Walt that people keep missing the boat with, he always gets underestimated by everybody. Whether it's Gustavo, whether it's Mike, people underestimate Walt time in and time out. And he burns them all. He burns them. And Walt right now is at the point, he's at the point of no return. He is a criminal. To the core. He's going to do whatever it takes, whatever he thinks he needs to do, you know. He told Jesse, "Listen, I'm in the Empire business." So this is going to seem more like a season finale. Then, of course, the season finale, because I wish the episodes can go all the way throughout. But, you know, we'll be right back here next July when season 5, part 2 premieres, episode 9 of season 5 premieres sometime in the middle of next July, watching intently on how this thing is going to play out. But as far as predictions for this episode, I mean, Walt, you know, I think something major is going to happen with Hank. Finally getting a whiff of you know, Walt being involved with it. I can see Walt being involved in this thing. I can see that possibly happening. Of course, they're bringing back Lydia with this episode, so she's going to be dealing with Walt. And I would assume dealing with Walt and Jesse. I'm assuming Walt. And Walt finds a way to pull Jesse back into it. I can see that. As you could, you never know which direction that this show is going to go into. That's the absolute beauty of this show, not knowing it and how great the writing is. Well, the direction that Andy Roddick is going to is riding off into the sunset with Brooklyn Decker, which is not a bad thing at all. Roddick, of course, early this week, a couple of days ago on Thursday, announced his retirement. Right, announced his retirement from tennis, 30 years old, which is old for a tennis player. I mean, everybody, listen, what Roger Federer is doing is unheard of. You know, Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi had some success in their late 20s, early 30s. In particular, Agassi, who took years off earlier in his career. That's why he was able to have some of that success in his 30s, because he messed around for 2 or 3 years when he was in his 20s. But, you know, Roddick is finished. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He has a million other things going on with just, you know, he's doing some radio stuff. He's certainly a marketable, certainly comes off to me as a smart guy who will do fine in different business ventures in his life. And he's married to Brooklyn Decker. So, you know, life is not all, you know, life is good for Andy Roddick. As far as his quote unquote legacy and where he stands in my eyes as a tennis player, I look at Roddick's career as decent. I don't think Roddick, first of all, he is not a Hall of Famer by any stretch of imagination. And I know tennis has this NBA type feel in terms of just everybody gets into Hall of Fame in tennis. Everybody. I mean, I believe Gabriella Sabatini's in the Hall of Fame. She has no business in the Hall of Fame. I mean, one major, like you win one major, all automatically puts you in the Hall of Fame. That's what Roddick has. Roddick won one major in his career. He won one major. He lost four finals, all to Roger Federer. Now, he came on along in an era where you have three lock Hall of Famers, and you have three guys who will go down as three of the top, probably 20 players of all time. Federer and Nadal are probably two of the top 10 right now. Djokovic, he keeps winning at his rate, and his age would be certainly join that top 15 category. So he came along at the wrong time. I mean, that's all there is to it. He came along at the wrong time, in a time of, you know, three dominant players. But with that being said, Roddick, the thing that annoyed me about Roddick, and I can't defend Roddick, is he never added to his game. I mean, he was stubborn. You know, we know he could serve 180 miles an hour. He never added any variety to his game. He had no chance at the French Open. This idea, you know, that they're pumping him up to be, oh, he showed up every match, played hard, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, he played hard. I'm not giving him tossing roses for playing hard. He got the Davis Cup, which means to me, Davis Cup is not a big deal anymore as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how many people watch Davis Cup? You know, all these American commentators defending Roddick and trying to defend his career, and give me a break here. He's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, yeah, Mary Jo Fernandez crying. Like, oh, God. It got annoying after a while. I mean, why are we defending his career? Call it. I'm not even going to say he underachieved. I don't know how good he could have been. I think he was overrated coming in. I thought the expectation, his expectation level, or the expectations that were put on him were just too high. And, of course, that was to be somewhat expected following, you know, American tennis's greatest generation. I mean, he follows a generation of Sampras, Agassi, Courier, Chang, you know, Aaron Krikstein, to say the least, because he didn't win any majors. But he followed a great generation of American tennis players, the greatest generation of all time, in terms of American tennis players. But Hall of Famer? No, not even close. Not even close. Not even, like, you know how many guys that you had to put in, the Tennis Hall of Fame before you put in Andy Roddick? I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, you have to put Marat Safin in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think he's anywhere close to being a Hall of Famer either. I don't think he's close to even being a Hall of Famer. He won two majors. Is Goran Ivanišević, you're going to put Goran Ivanišević in the Hall of Fame? He won Wimbledon. Wimbledon is a bigger tournament than the U.S. Open. How many finals did he live? I'd be honest with you, I'd take Ivanišević's career over Roddick's, considering the competition that Ivanišević had to deal with. I mean, there's no way he should sniff the Hall of Fame. I don't see how you can make it. I don't think you even make an argument for him being a Hall of Fame. It's like, come on. Again, had a nice career, won his major in 2003, and after that, you know, he was just okay. He's a slightly above average tennis player. A little above average. Yeah, yes, he was in the top five, top ten. But again, this is men's tennis. The men's tennis is not that deep. And this, again, this idea that he held down American tennis. Look where American tennis is at right now. Can you name five guys of note in American tennis right now? Who matters in American tennis right now, men's wise? Who's relevant? I mean, when is Donald Young going to get it? Like, when, you know, they were pumping him 4 or 5 years ago as his next you know, big time talent and big time player. He's still trying to find his game. Isner, I mean, I give Marty Fish credit for, you know, making, for, you know, extending his career. But again, he has limitations. He's a round of 16, you know, third round player at best in Grand Slams. Not going to have a threat to win a Grand Slam. James Blake, I mean, American tennis, since Sampras Agassi went out, American tennis has been a joke. Again, people want to give Roddick credit for playing hard all the time, being committed to Davis Cup. I'll do the flip side and knock him for not adding to his game and not improving. He's the same player in, you know, 2003 that he ended up being in, say, 2008, 2009, the same player. He did not improve at all. You know, he accomplished what he accomplished on talent and toughness. Didn't add to his game. Minutes after the 9 o'clock hour, we're expecting fantasy guru John Beckler II to come on and talk some fantasy football. I know I had my draft a couple of weeks ago. Very interesting season for fantasy football, considering, you know, just the lack of running backs and the plethora of wide receivers. So if you're a fantasy football fan, you would not want to miss that aspect and that part, that spot that's coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up show. Wake up call. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. 43 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this September 1st edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, John Beckler II joins us. John, thanks for joining the program. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. I'm ready for a big weekend of fantasy football drafting, and college football starts kicking off this weekend, so it's one of the best weekends of the year for me.
John, again, first of all, thanks for coming on the program. I know it's early in the morning, early on a Saturday morning. I've done only one draft, and you know, I have one draft so far. I have another one coming up tomorrow, and I've talked to a lot of people, and basically the same. The themes have been the same, in terms of how deep the wide receiver position is versus just how thin the running back position is. What is your best advice in terms of how to navigate wide receivers and running backs when you're drafting your team?
Well, you're absolutely right. The running back position is very thin this year, and the wide receivers are very deep. So my advice has been to select the running back with your first two draft choices this year and build your roster off of that position. So you have strong running backs, and then you can build depth at other positions as you move on through the draft, wide receivers being an example of that. There's tons of value in wide receiver later on in the draft, even beyond, you know, the 9th, 10th round of the draft. You can pick up receivers that are starting as maybe the number two guy on the team, who have a good chance of producing numbers for your fantasy club. So your analysis is spot on. You want to build off of your running backs, and you can pick up wide receivers later on in your draft.
Give me some players, because the league I'm involved in is 14 teams, so very, like, almost at maximum, at the maximum amount of teams. And it was a very interesting draft. The draft was a lot of fun to go through. Give me some players who you absolutely would stay away from with number one picks. Guys who are, we know are talented, have big upsides, but for whatever reason, injury, inconsistency, that you just say, hey, don't touch this guy unless until they reach, you know, the beginning of the second round or just second round in general, who will indeed go in the first round.
Well, you know, a lot of guys are picking Darren McFadden this year, and, you know, he's a guy that he's been injured, you know, every year of his career. Going back to college, he struggled with injuries. So, you know, you certainly can't fault a guy who gets hurt. You know, it's not his fault. It's a tough game. It's a physical game. But he seems to be bitten by this, you know, snake on the injury. So, a snake bitten with injury, I should say. But that's one guy I would kind of shy away from. You know, not to say that you can't draft him, but you're going to want to wait. He's been going in the middle of the first round, which I think is a little bit too early for him. If he's there at the end of the first round, certainly in a deep league like yours with 14 teams, you know, if he's there towards the end of the first round, he's worth the pick there because, you know, the running back pool has thinned out a little bit by that time. In the same vein, DeMarco Murray is another guy who's been, you know, injury prone and who's had, you know, only a couple years in the league, I think. You know, this will be his second year for him. So I think that's a guy you kind of want to be a little bit skeptical of. Obviously, Ryan Matthews is somebody who's injured and probably won't play until, you know, week four of the season. Adrian Peterson, Marshawn Lynch, those are a couple of guys. Lynch obviously has a DUI charge pending against him, so there is a potential suspension that could come with that. Now, I will say this with Lynch, you know, based on Kenny Britt's one-game suspension, I would imagine that bodes well for Lynch and his owners, because I would have thought that they both probably would have gotten at least three or four games worth of suspended play, but that doesn't seem to be the case. With Britt only getting one game, I would think that bodes well for Lynch and his owners. So that's the guy you might, you know, want to consider a little bit later in the first round. But those would be guys that I would, at running back, that I would not necessarily, you know, not draft at all, but, you know, take into consideration where you're drafting them.
Yeah, I took Lynch in the third round, and I thought it was a good value pick. Knew the risk of one involved coming off a great season last year. He's always, you know, could be a head case. But what are some? Now I had some guys in my league take tight ends in the first round. Last year, we know it was a historic season for tight ends, in particular Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham. Are those two guys first round worthy picks in your eyes? Depending, even like in a 14 or a 16 team league.
Yeah, I'd say. You know, I'm not a huge fan of drafting a tight end that early. But in Jimmy Graham's case, he would be the exception to that rule, especially in a deep 14 or 16-team league. Because, you know, he's going to put up – the guy caught 99 balls last year. And, you know, that's well beyond, you know, your normal tight end production. So, ostensibly, you're drafting an extra wide receiver at that position. So, I'm okay with drafting him in the first round. Gronkowski – I'm a little skeptical on him because he put up such a great season last year that I just don't see him with all the talent they have in New England and all the options they have at the receiver position and at the tight end position, including Hernandez. I just don't see him reaching that mark again. So I think that he's being overdrafted. And as a rule, I don't take a tight end, you know, that early in the draft. The difference in the total amount of fantasy points that your tight end is going to score from Jimmy Graham to Rob Gronkowski. You know, if you take that tier, you put those guys in tier one, then you drop down into tier two with guys like Antonio Gates and your Jason Wittens and your Fred Davises, those types of guys, your Vernon Davises, you know, the difference in points scored there isn't that great. So my opinion is you wait on a tight end and you're going to get better value later on in the draft. So Graham would be the only exception to that rule, in my opinion.
I completely agree with that. And I think Gronkowski is going to come down. The thing that would make me nervous about Gronkowski, I still expect him to have a very good year, but a couple of things that would make me nervous is, and you brought up a couple of those points, based on Hernandez is having a big camp. People expect big things out of him, especially if he's healthy the whole year. You bring in Brandon Lloyd, Brandon Lloyd comes in. But Gronkowski, you have to look at these things, when we're talking about drafting players. Some of the off-season things that occurred, you know, Gronkowski coming off an injury, did a lot of partying to a point to where there were some people in New England, there were some whispers that said people in New England, the coaching staff organization said, listen, you know, enough, like calm down here. Like you got your partying out the way, you know, time to get refocused. So I would be very nervous about Gronkowski. I certainly wouldn't take him with a first round pick, but just in general, I'd be kind of nervous about him. I mean, certainly you have to take him, you know, you can take him third, fourth round, whatever, something like that. But he would make me kind of nervous coming into this year, especially coming off a historic NFL season that he had.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you said there. He's one of those guys that just feels like he's set up for a letdown this year because of all the, you know, whatever you do in the offseason is your business. You know, God knows I've done my share of partying in my day, so I'm not going to begrudge a guy that. But like you said, you know, there's got to come a point where you get back into camp and you get refocused, which, you know, it seems like that's what he did. But again, with all those weapons that are around him in that offense, I personally think that Hernandez is going to have a bigger year than Gronkowski this year. So I'm targeting Hernandez, you know, in round 4 or 5, because if you remember back a few years when Marquez Colston first came in the league with New Orleans, he was actually listed as a tight end, just like Hernandez is now. Even though he never played tight end for them, he probably lined up at tight end maybe a handful of times throughout the course of the year. He was actually a wide receiver for them, but he was rostered as a tight end. So in fantasy leagues, they listed him as a tight end. He was drafted as a tight end, and basically at that point you're playing, you know, an extra receiver on your roster. So it's very beneficial if you can find guys like that, which I think Hernandez will be this year.
Getting back to the running backs, let's say you can't get the big-time running back. Let's say you can't get Arian Foster or LeSean McCoy or even to a lesser extent like a Chris Johnson, that type of who I expect to have a bounce-back year. How do you target your running backs, say – you know, when if you're going to go with them third, fourth, fifth, sixth round, what kind of running backs should you look at picking up on your team?
Well, if you're in a position where you're drafting running backs in the late second, early third round, there are some good options there for you. You know, based on the average draft position of all drafts performed this week on Fantasy Football Calculator, you have guys like Doug Martin, Trent Richardson still available. Willis McGahee, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, Sed Benson, you know, those are guys that are available through round 3, 4, and 5 that are legitimate starters for your fantasy team. Now, they're not going to be in that same tier, obviously, as the guys you get in the first round, but if you can pair two of those guys together, they're going to be steady performers for you throughout the course of the year. And if you were able to get a top-flight quarterback or a couple top-flight receivers earlier in the first, second round, and those are good complementary running backs that can get you through the season. And there's also, you know, guys that are available later on. Like you mentioned, you got great value, by the way, in getting Marshawn Lynch in the third round. If you were able to get Robert Turbin later in your draft, or if you're able to pick him up on waivers or in free agency, he is going to be a very, very nice backup to Marshawn Lynch. So if Lynch goes down via injury or is suspended for any reason, Turbin is a very capable backup. A rookie that can come in. He's actually kind of like a poor man's Trent Richardson, to be honest with you. That's the style that he runs with. That's the type of build that he has. And he came out of Utah State, and he's basically got the same skill set as Trent Richardson, just without the Alabama, you know, pedigree. So he's a guy that can come in and help your team out, and you can get him very late in your drafts. One other name I'll mention, actually two, David Wilson and Rashad Jennings, are both guys that you can pick up probably in the middle of the sixth round, and they can have success for your team as well.
Give me some guys who, and I'm thinking of a couple of big-time rookies from last year who had tremendous years. We talk about Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, A.J. Green. Give me some guys who you think that will be impactful from the start in terms of rookies, maybe not to the level of those guys, because those, you know, Cam Newton, what he did was historic, but give some guys that might surprise some people coming out as rookies.
Well, the first guy I will mention is Doug Martin in Tampa Bay. I've been watching him all preseason, and I've gone back and looked at a bit of his game tape from college at Boise, and he's a guy that is very much like Ray Rice. And Ray Rice, if you remember, played at Rutgers for Coach Schiano, who is now the head coach in Tampa Bay.
Right.
They went out and they actually jumped up in the draft to select Martin for their offense. He's won the starting role there, and he's a very capable back. I think he's going to have a good amount of success in Schiano's system, and I would expect him to, over the course of the next few years, kind of mirror what Ray Rice is doing in the league. So I really like his upside and his potential. So Doug Martin is a guy that can come in as a rookie and have immediate impact for your team. Same thing with Trent Richardson. We've seen that he had a minor knee procedure done, which kind of kept him out of the preseason. And the way that guys were going down in preseason due to injury this year, that's not necessarily a bad thing for the Browns. But he's a guy that's going to come in. He's going to be an every down back for the Browns. He's going to get a lot of touches this year, and they're going to try to feature him in the offense. So he's another guy that can help you immediately on your fantasy team. There's also a couple quarterbacks. Obviously, we have RG3 and Andrew Luck, who clearly are, the top of the class in, being selected number one and number two in this year's draft. Both capable quarterbacks. Both are going to have impactful years for your fantasy team. I don't see any reason why you couldn't start them in a deeper league, like a 14 or 16 team league, such as you're in, or even have them as a backup quarterback in a more shallow league, like a 10 team or a 12 team league. And the one guy that's come on lately, and I actually I did a show the other day where we did bold predictions, and I selected Russell Wilson to be the offensive rookie of the year this year.
Wow. Whoa.
And he's a guy that. Yeah, that was my bold prediction for the show there. And the reason being is that he's in a situation where they have a very good defense, they have a good offensive line in front of them, and they have a good running game. And anytime you can have a good running game with a quarterback who's mobile, not in the same light as Michael Vick when he first came out, he was looking to run before he would pass. Okay, Russell Wilson, RG3, Cam Newton, those guys are actually looking to pass before they run. And they're very capable of staying in the pocket. And they use the run when they have to and when it's to their advantage. And that's how Wilson is. If he can, if you roll him out to the right or roll him out to the left, the defense has to honor what he's doing. And that helps the running game. And vice versa. If the defense has to honor the running game and they exploit that, well, then it opens up things over the top of the defense for him to make plays. And I just feel that he's very calm and collected out there when you watch him. He's got the respect of the teammates in his locker room, and I really think he's going to have a nice season. I think he could help you out. If you're able to get him later on in your draft and stash him as a quarterback too, you might be pleasantly surprised by what you see through the course of the season.
Doug, excuse me, John. John, great stuff. Great stuff. We certainly look forward to having you on over the course of the season. John Beckler II. Again, we'll have him on the course during the season. He'll help you out with your fantasy. You've already given me points that I'm gonna add to my draft tomorrow, without question. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you soon. We'll see you again.
I appreciate the invitation, and I would be happy to join you again in the future. Thanks so much.
No problem. You enjoy the rest of your morning, Doug. John. John D. Beckler. Excuse me, John Beckler. The second, of course, talking to fantasy football. Excuse me. He did a tremendous job with breaking it down. Again, Gronkowski scares me. Gronkowski scares me as far as being a high pick. Forget about first round, second, third round. He scares me. Jimmy Graham, if you're going to take a tight end at first round, which he certainly wouldn't recommend, Graham would be the guy to take with a first round pick. If you're going to take a guy that hot, take a tight end that with a first round pick. He gave you a couple sleepers, Doug Martin, and what have you. I would add Jaquez Rogers to that list too. I think he's going to have a very good year as well. So, good job by John. Certainly, we'll have him on over the course of the season. Great job by John. We'll have him on during the course of the season as we delve into the NFL season. Again, fantasy football is the popularity of it is just off the charts. It really is. I mean, now they keep stats at the stadiums now for, just fantasy football. I mean, it's that serious. That's going to wrap up this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will be back certainly next week. Again, keep it could be either Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll do an NFL preview show along with a NFL preview show leading off to the Dallas Giant game. Season premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Season 5. Next Saturday, September 8th, we'll do a two-hour program without question. I don't care how early it is or how late it is. We're going to do a two-hour program. I promise you that. I will see you then. I will see you soon. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Adios.